Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Brutal, an epic grimdark fantasy by James Alderdice. Narrated by Liam Gerard.
Down the swift path I glide, trying to outrace ghosts, and find I cannot, but they remain by my side to encourage me to further my stride. 1. The Road. Steel-grey mountains flanked him, like jutting teeth to the left and the right, with a precipice leering at his side. Instinct shouted that this tongue of road led into the jaws of a trap, but he did not slow his mount's pace, and had no one to blame but himself when, around a sharp bend, he was violently dismounted. A tightrope was stretched between a scraggly tree and a boulder. He was lucky it hadn't hit him in the throat. Had he been an average-sized man instead of a giant, it would have. Instead, it caught him across the chest, flung his body to the ground, and left him dazed and breathless. The horse fared worse. In the commotion, robbers leapt from their spider-holes and tried to grab the beast's reins, but it panicked at their sudden presence and careened off the side of the cliff. A terrible scream echoed throughout the canyon as it tumbled down to the rocks and river below. Voices like cracked leather argued,
"Could have told you. We didn't need to spook the horse like that. I wanted to be sure we got him," said another with a lighter, nasally tone.
"Ah, you made sure of that, didn't you, you half-wit?"
The last had a distinct voice, as if he came from a distant land.
"See to him, then. If he's alive, he's alive. So slit his throat, and give me that sword on his back."
"Yes, Suko," said the nasally one.
The closest robber crept up to examine the man on the ground. He was big, that was plain enough. They had seen that when they espied his approach from a distance. Now they saw he wore fine mail, sturdy leather boots, and a long blue wool cloak like a soldier, or better yet, an officer of the Kingdom Army might wear. It had white fur around the collar, now ashen grey with weathering, but there were no marks of rank they could see. There were a few other accoutrements that denoted he wasn't standard military. He was probably a scout or a sellsword, a mercenary for hire in the King's Guard, at least until recently. The robbers especially noticed his weapons. A broad dirk hung from his belt, as were two swords at his side. Both the big bastard sword and smaller thrusting blade were of the finest workmanship. These were of unrivalled make, forged far to the east in distant Cathal, where men tested iron through flesh and blood, as well as fire and ice. The robbers salivated at the thought of selling them. The blades would bring a price greater than a month's worth of banditry on the common folk. This was truly a king's ransom, all accomplished with the ease of a rope across the road. Hardly any work at all.
"He's still breathing. Hurry up," ordered the robber chieftain.
The smaller one approached quickly with his dagger drawn. He looked upon the unconscious man's shaven face. There was something familiar about the square jaw and long dark hair, but he couldn't be sure what. Didn't matter. He would slit the sellsword's throat and take his property. He leaned in closer to do his work when the man's blue eyes opened. The sellsword had been playing possum. Before the robber could scream, the broad dirk was in his mouth, slicing his tongue in half and plunging out the back of his head.
"Kill him!" cried the robber chief.
Two of the robbers had crossbows and sent bolts flying, but the sellsword used the smaller robber as a shield and caught the bolts in the dead man's back.
"Draw your blades, fools!"
The sellsword flung the pin-cushioned body off his dirk and leapt to his feet.
"Didn't I tell you to make sure he was dead?"
growled the robber chieftain to his lieutenant. The lieutenant gritted his teeth and produced a studded cudgel. The other two had drawn curved blades, preferred by mountain folk. The lieutenant took a step forward, but his confidence washed away when the sellsword drew his bastard sword. The lieutenant shouted his war cry and charged in with his cudgel raised for a brain-shattering blow, while the others came in behind him. The sellsword sliced through the raised cudgel and the arm behind it. The lieutenant dropped to the ground screaming. Then, with a second stroke, his decapitated head rested beside his fallen arm, and silence returned to the canyon. The two bowmen-come-swordsmen looked to each other in horror, screamed, and charged as one. Like a venomous serpent, the sellsword blade licked out and slashed the one on the left's bowels wide open, then deflected the one on the right's crashing strike. It sent the robber's sword flying away. Too late, the road pirates realized. They were facing a true blade master. The sellsword sent his steel through the exposed man's chest and held him up a moment as he gaped, then hurled him to the ground. The robber chieftain had a short sword, though it was not of such good steel as the sellsword's, nor did he have the skill of it, and he knew it. He dropped his sword a pace away from himself and fell to his knees.
"Mercy, Lord. We was only trying to feed our starving families. It was nothing personal. Honest. Mercy."
He lowered his head in supplication. The sellsword said nothing, but he stepped closer to the edge of the precipice to look upon the remains of his shattered horse. He cast a disappointed look down. The horse had crashed among the rocks at the bottom, but now the river that cut through the mountains was dragging the remains into its brown murk. There would be no retrieving anything from the saddlebags, even if he found a way down. He glared at the kneeling robber, who looked back fearfully.
"Truly sorry about that, Lord. It was a mistake. We never meant to hurt the animal, honest."
The sellsword turned and strode toward the robber chieftain, with his sword still drawn.
"Please, Lord, spare me. I have 7 pups at home."
He closed his eyes, bracing for the looming death stroke.
"And a crippled mother and a 3-legged dog."
"I'm not going to kill you," said the sellsword.
He snatched the robber's wool hat and wiped the blood from his sword, then tossed the gory hat back to the still-kneeling robber.
"Thank you, Lord."
"How far is Aldrith from here?" "You mean all death?"
The sellsword furrowed his brow.
"Start a fire."
"Sorry, Lord. That's just what the locals call it. Bad place, that. Why do you think I'm at here in the wilds, where it's safe?"
If the robber was hoping for a laugh or even a smirk, he didn't get it from the sellsword, so he continued talking as he gathered tinder for a fire.
"It's about 10 more leagues up this road. You'll be wondering where it could be when suddenly you come over a blind rise, and there she'll be, spread out before you like a waiting hussy. A big sellsword like you ought to be able to find lots of work, I imagine. Lots of troubles there lately, from what I hear."
Once a blaze was kindled and crackling, he threw a few larger chunks of dry wood on.
"Maybe you and me could become partners, huh? I know all the ins and outs of the area."
"I don't need a partner.
Everyone needs friends.
I see what happened to yours."
The robber glanced at the 4 bodies a short distance away. His grim look quickly gave way to a big grin.
"You're playing with me, aren't you? They had it coming fair and square. Besides, they weren't my friends. They were just business associates."
He watched closely to see what the sellsword might say, but the taciturn man remained silent.
I could point you in the right direction. I know who you should talk to in All Death. I could moderate hiring you out. For a pittance, of course. The sellsword didn't say anything for a long time, then said,
"You owe me a horse."
The robber shrugged. "Afraid I haven't got one. Banditry isn't all that lucrative out here in the wilds. Find another trade," said the sellsword.
"That's easy for you to say," said the robber, indignant. "I wasn't lying. I do have 7 pups at home to provide for. Farming in these mountains is piss poor. Nothing grows in the 6 months we have without snow and ice. The mines in All Death aren't putting out iron any more. What else can I do? I don't care, but if I hear about bandits in these mountains again, I'll kill you," said the sellsword.
The robber gave a false grin, nodding, and then warmed his hands over the flames.
"This is nice." "Put one of the big flat daggers on edge there," said the sellsword.
The robber looked suspiciously at him, but did as he was told. The blade was in the coals, heating while the handle was shielded by the ring of stones.
"What's this for?"
"When order is restored in Aldrith, you could go back to work, yes?"
asked the sellsword, pointedly. The robber grinned, saying, "There is always some kind of work if a man is willing, but I don't think I could. I've become an infamous outlaw in these parts. Everyone in these mountains has heard of Suko."
He beat his own chest in pride, then grew sombre. "For me to show my face in All Death, some form of justice would have to show that I've paid my debt to the townsfolk, and I don't know how I could do that and keep what I've got."
The sellsword nodded.
"I've thought of that. Is it hot enough?"
The robber looked up in worry, pointing at the fire.
"The dagger? For what?"
The sellsword's blade was out in a flash, and the robber's right hand was gone. The robber's eyes almost bulged out of their sockets in shock when he realized his hand was in his lap.
"Cauterize that stump now,"
ordered the sellsword. The robber panicked and fumbled with the red-hot dagger while his right wrist bled out. The sellsword cracked him on the skull with his sword pommel, then took the red-hot dagger and cauterized the robber's bloody stump. The sellsword made himself tea and drank solemnly, waiting for his guest to awaken. When the robber did wake, he howled in agonized pain. He tried to get up, but, no longer having a hand, had to prop himself up with his elbow. He stared daggers at the sellsword, who squinted at him, displeased with the caterwauling.
"Why did you take my hand?"
he frothed.
"Now you're marked as having paid your thieves' debt under the king's law. When there is order in Aldrith, and there will be soon, go back and earn your place as a new man."
The robber wailed with a great gnashing of teeth.
"You bastard! How am I to be reckoned as a man when you've crippled me? You're a sick pig, you know that. Better for you to have killed me than live like this."
"So be it," answered the sellsword.
The robber had half a moment to glance up at the shining blade. He raised his left hand, but 4 fingers and the neck behind them were set free as the word "no" escaped his lips. The sellsword dumped the last of the tea over the dying coals, cleaned his blade, turned, and strode up the road as it wound on. The mountains were splashed red with the light of the setting sun, and a cold wind blew ahead of him, like ghosts heralding warning. The sellsword was coming to Aldrith.
2. The City. He spent the cold night in the mountains amongst boulders by the wayside. Continual wind swept out of the high passes like the breath of frost giants. He had been through worse, but not much worse.
Morning was a welcome respite, and he continued his journey. Just as the robber had said, it was almost a surprise when the sellsword came up over a blind rise and the city lay stretched out before him. A rickety sign made from the remains of an old shield was propped up by a rotting fence post, defying the wind by remaining erect. The name Aldreth was emblazoned across its sun-bleached face, but the worn lettering had been crudely altered to read All Death. Grain fields surrounded the city proper, but they contained only stunted, stubby growth this late in the season. Like all mining towns, Aldreth was ugly, blanketed by a perpetual haze of greys and yellow browns. Half of the buildings were on semi-level ground, the same as the fields, but the other half of the city rose in steep terraces, zigzagging up the mountainside. The change in elevation made some of the city's towers and smelters seem especially tall and imposing. A few mines that had fueled the city's growth were working. They still belched acrid smoke even now, but more than a dozen looked forgotten. Some cables and turrets were still trussed up and down the mountainside, but they did not appear to be in use. A vast section of the city had once been a foundry works, but its chimneys were also cold and abandoned. High on the mountain behind the city stood the massive bust of a topless woman. It was at least 20 spans tall. The sellsword recognised it as an image of Inara, patron goddess and protector of women, livestock and fields. She looked to be fashioned of white marble blocks, but age and mining smoke had cast a sickly pallor over her as well, making her eyelids dark and foreboding. Why she was erected beside a mining metropolis like Aldreth was a mystery to the sellsword. He took in the view one more time, breathing deeply, and started down the steep path toward the city. The smell of sulphur blown up from the valley floor stung his nostrils. There were no trees, save a few runt-like bushes that produced little usable fuel. They must use coal. A stone wall with a jagged parapet surrounded 3/4 of the city, circling it in a half-moon up against the slanted mountainside. Crumbling guard towers were spaced evenly, every 100 paces along the wall, but it was plain to see that most of them were not occupied. The crisp morning air showed smoke rising from cook fires in only 3 out of more than a score of them. A small torrent of a river washed out of the canyon behind him, ran down into the valley, then was spider-webbed with irrigation ditches that ran serpentine through the valley floor, before dipping into the city on one end and exiting out the other side much the browner. The sellsword passed a cemetery on his right, halfway down the slope. The pungent smell of fresh-turned earth was strong here, and the slight depression of many new graves pockmarked the hillside. Most were decorated with the stubs of candles, or a pair of coins stacked neatly to pay for the dead's passage to the other side. There certainly seemed to be more graves, new graves, than a city of this size should have. A pair of gravediggers busied themselves at the far end of the field, but there were others present. A beautiful brunette woman with the wind tearing at her hair and silken robe stood with 2 young children at her feet beside a fresh plot. A pair of large men-at-arms stood nearby, but they offered no comfort or solace to the woman. They were merely present. The sellsword looked at her, and she at him. Her features were striking, and he reminded himself that she was clearly at her husband's funeral. The 2 men-at-arms became aware of his presence and growled their displeasure. One made a crude gesture for him to keep moving. The sellsword ignored them, but nodded to the woman, not knowing what he might say to her, and continued his way. Once he arrived at the bottom of the valley, the sellsword heard an argument rattling out the door of the nearest farmstead. A young man and an old man rushed out the door, trading ineffective blows with one another as they struggled over a sheathed sword. The sellsword paused to watch. A screeching woman followed the arguing farmer and son, but stopped fearfully on the porch when she saw the sellsword. The son broke away and spat, saying, "Better to make some money and enjoy life than sitting here eating gruel."
"You fool! Do you want a long life or a quick death?"
shouted the farmer, still grabbing at the sheathed sword. The son finally knocked the old man to the ground as they tussled for the weapon. The farmer cried out,
"You're a knife in my heart!"
The son turned around. "I want more than this," he shouted, pointing at the dying fields.
"What are you thinking?" asked the farmer. "Joining with those that ruin our lives? What about tradition?"
The son threw up his hands and waved the old man away.
"I'll live my own way. Tradition be damned."
He turned his back on them and trotted toward the city, swinging the sheathed sword at invisible foes. The woman caught her husband's attention and mutely pointed at the sellsword.
"What do you want?" asked the farmer.
"Some water from your well."
The farmer pointed at the well, indicating the bucket and ladle. The farmer lamented to his wife,
"The young are all fools now. There is no reaching them. They grasp onto every new thing with no respect for the past. They don't realize they are dancing upon the blood of our ancestors."
He scowled at the sellsword.
"And that blood attracts wolves."
The sellsword took a second draught from the ladle and glanced at the farmer. Embarrassed at his accusatory words and, perchance, dire consequences, the farmer went inside the house, then slammed and audibly bolted the door. The sellsword wiped his mouth on his sleeve and dropped the ladle back into the bucket. He adjusted the harness that held his swords upon his back and continued his journey. The fields along the road looked as if blight had struck them. Seedlings were wilted and sorry-looking, despite the moisture readily available from the irrigation canals. Trash discarded along the road increased the closer the sellsword got to the city gates, as did the foul reek of a place no one took any pride in. The portcullis was raised, the visible iron teeth flaked with rust. There was a fat guard asleep beside the wall. He reclined upon an old wooden chair, snoring. Tempting as it was to kick the legs out from under him, the sellsword resisted and went through the gate.
"Hey, you! You can't just go walking in like that!"
declared a voice from above. The sellsword looked up to see a skinny little man wearing a guardsman's tabard over his nightclothes. He only had one boot on.
"I just did."
The skinny guardsman folded his arms across his chest.
"Oh, wise ass, huh? You know what we do to... Quit barking at me, dog, and tell me where to find the man in charge."
Having his authority ignored and insulted made the guardsman check himself, finally realizing the imposing nature of the sellsword. He scrutinized the weapons upon the sellsword's back, as well as the blue tartan cloak, and wondered at the sellsword's station.
"I'm sorry. You were horseless and I didn't recognize you. Perhaps you are looking for Master Anias. Or, excuse me, did Master Varlak send for you?"
"I don't know either of those names. I thought Aldreth was ruled by a duke."
"Oh yes, Duke Owain. He is technically in charge of Aldreth."
"What do you mean, technically?"
The skinny guard smiled and came down a couple of steps from the rampart.
"Listen, do you have any money? Do you want to make some?"
"I'm listening."
"You're a sellsword, right?"
The sellsword grunted.
"You give me a tiny cut, and I'll give you some good intel on things here in Aldreth."
The sellsword frowned, but tossed him a copper.
"Thank ye. The Duke is supposed to be in charge of the city, but his chief adviser, the wizard Varlak, was the only one really running things. But then his apprentice wizard, Anias the Whisperer, broke with him and each have been working to consolidate control of the city. There has been no end of trouble and bloodshed here.
We guardsmen are paid well to remain as unbiased as we can be. All in all, it makes for a good situation for one such as you to find work. Both of us, really. Might I suggest going to Master Anias first? He is the stronger of the two parties. Tell him that Durst, the gatekeeper, sent you.
He pointed to a tall black stone tower on the east. It looked like a fortress turret, and flames belched menacingly from the top.
That one is Anias's keep. You can see it from anywhere in the city. The grey one, farther to the west, is Varlak's home.
The sellsword scrutinised the guard, who finally became aware of his state of undress. He took off his one boot.
How long has this been going on? Asked the sellsword.
Well, the Duke has let Varlak run things in his stead for years, but the dispute between Varlak and Anias has been inflamed for the last few months. Since around the time the usurper took the crown in Hellenic.
Why are wizards in a mining city like Aldrith?
The guardsman grinned, enjoying his position of being the town crier he had always wanted to be.
Don't you know? Aldrith was the greatest producer of iron in my grandfather and great-grandfather's ages. But the veins ran dry. Now there is nothing but slag and dross. Duke Owain brought in the wizard Varlak because he's an alchemist. Varlak said he could find the formula to change the mountain, make it full of iron again.
His eyes brightened as he spoke of the supposed miracle.
Iron? Why not gold if he has such power? Scoffed the sellsword.
That's what I said at first, but we've all learned a thing or two about alchemy here in Aldeath since the wizard's arrival. Anyway, iron is a baser metal and therefore much easier to transmute from other base metals. It must be coaxed to evolve into the next highest element.
His hands reached into the heavens like an evangelist as he explained.
Varlak knows how to do it. I've seen the results. It really worked.
He nodded sagely. The sellsword pointed towards the abandoned mines behind the city.
Doesn't look like they're working now.
The guardsman rolled his eyes, as if the sellsword had said the most ignorant thing imaginable.
That's because of the wizard's civil war. Everything was working again, quite well indeed, too, for perhaps a week. But Anias felt cheated by his master, and so the apprentice rebelled. Varlak was no friend of the people, and most who have taken a side are with Anias the Whisperer.
He struck his own chest twice to signify he was Anias's man.
Varlak has more money, but little influence outside of his handful of guild members and the iron merchants.
Why is he called the Whisperer?
Anias is a conjurer of foremost class. He is amazingly skilled, but when he was younger he mixed some elements that exploded. He made a homunculus from it, I'm told, but it affected his voice, and now he whispers. That's about as loud as he can speak. Trust me, you wouldn't want him to have to try and raise his voice.
And the Duke?
He stays out of their way. He has no spine. The Duchess has made him a cuckold.
He laughed longer than necessary. The sellsword rubbed at his jaw.
Which way to the Duke's?
The guardsman smirked.
Ah, I see that got your attention. Go straight down this road, the two-story white villa with an empty moat. The drawbridge is always down. That's it. I warn you, though, the Duke will have no need of your sword. But, he chuckled, the Duchess may be your sheath if you strike her fancy. But mark my words, if you want coin, you take your sword to Anias. You will be passing by one of his strongholds, the Stygian, on your way to the Duke.
I'll remember that.
The sellsword turned and strode down the avenue.
Remember to tell Anias that Durst the gatekeeper sent you.
The guardman called after him.
He will reward us both.
3. The Duchess. The city was...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?